a lot of people end up on leadership tracks not because they made a choice to want to be a leader, or because they think they have something to contribute, or because they think they can, you know, shape the change that they'd like to see, but actually end up being on the track because that's just the natural progression in their career.
Welcome back to Future Proof, friends. Bill Sheridan here. How you doing? I hope things are good. Things are pretty good here. Here being my home base of St. Louis, Missouri. Let's see what's new. Spring has officially, arrived isn't really the right word. I think exploded is more like it. Almost overnight. My gosh, leaves are out, flowers are out. The grass is that really deep shade of green that you only get in April. And I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about all of that. It's kind of nice, I guess, to see new growth after that beastly winter we just been through. But on the other hand, I am just not a spring and summer person. I think allergies are a big part of that. I'm pretty much going to be miserable allergy-wise for the next 6 months or so. But beyond that, I don't know. I just prefer cooler weather, you know? So Missouri in the summer is not my happy place, but you know, whatever. It is what it is. I'm here and happy to be here because we're going to be talking about leadership today. Okay. First, a note to say that this week's podcast is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, leadership. You know, we've been doing these podcasts for almost a year now, and as much talking as we've done about the future, the missing ingredient in all those conversations has been leadership, really. We just haven't spent much time talking about future leadership. And with 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day, that's a critical part of becoming future ready. Where are we going to find tomorrow's leaders? So that's why I am so glad to have as my guests this week. That's right, guests plural. It's a double shot episode of Future Proof. My guests are Emmanuel Gobio and Catherine Harris. Catherine is the founder and managing director of Collaboration Partners in London. She's built a career based on her fascination around what differentiates individual performance and how organizations can best support and encourage excellence. And Emmanuel, meanwhile, Emmanuel and I, we go back a ways. I first met Emmanuel, wow, it has to be 10 years or so ago. He was keynoting a conference I was attending, and I was blown away by his insights on leadership. He's been described as the first leadership guru for the digital generation, rather, and the freshest voice in leadership today. He's worked with organizations ranging from AstraZeneca to Zurich Financial Services via Google and the United Nations. He's one of Europe's most sought-after leadership speakers, and he's quite literally written the book, make that books, actually, about 21st century leadership. He's written a book called The Connected Leader, Creating Agile Organizations for People, Performance, and Profit, which is full of tips for developing a more informal, holistic leadership style that improves business performance. He's written one called Leader Shift, which features ideas for how we should reinvent leadership in an age of mass collaboration. And he's written Follow the Leader. This is a book I love, which is packed with perspectives from the followers of great leaders. And now he and Catherine Harris have co-authored a new book titled Unleash Your Leader, How to Win in Business. It's a blueprint of sorts for how you can turn yourself into a great leader. So many of us think we have what it takes to do the CEO's job. We just don't know how to get there, right? This book tells us what we should be doing today to improve our odds of becoming the leaders of tomorrow. And basically, what they tell us is this: to transition from where we are now to becoming a great leader, we have to master three elements of great leadership. One is what they call vertical agility, and that's the ability to both run a business and to change and adapt that business. The key there is being able to do both at once and at a speed that differentiates. The second element is what they call steadfast impact. And here's how they define it. They write, quote, "You need to appeal to multiple constituencies by being flexible enough to adapt your message without ever compromising on what you hold to be true, but always be willing to question your thinking," end quote. It's all about combining consistency and differentiation. That's steadfast impact. But the third element is the one I wanted to talk to them about this week, and that's something that they call boundless perspective. That's a great future-ready term right there, isn't it? And again, here's how they describe it. They write, quote, "To be successful, we need to be able to scan our environment from the broadest perspective and bring the outside in. We need to see the wood from the trees while operating at a speed where everything is blurred. We need to have networks that span way beyond what we would normally consider useful to unearth value others seldom see." Boundless perspective is about having the curiosity to search, the willingness to hear, the skill to combine, and the courage to rise above narrow-minded considerations to bring value to the business by challenging received wisdom, end quote. And I read that and I thought, I need to speak with them about this. And so we did. We spoke about the need to work in the business today while at the same time working on the business as it must exist tomorrow. We talked about that vital need for curiosity, and we spoke about how to build networks that will allow us to expand our perspectives almost exponentially. That's a perspective really that I hadn't considered before. That's that our ability to become future ready and anticipatory is as much a function of who we surround ourselves with as it is any change of mindset on our parts individually. So good stuff here from some truly deep thinkers about leadership on a global and digital scale. Here are Emmanuel Gobio and Catherine Thomas. So Emmanuel, Catherine, thanks for being here. And by the way, congratulations on the book. I haven't finished it, but I'm about 2/3 of the way through, and it's amazing. And I was thinking while I was reading it that this comes at the perfect time for me. I've been thinking about, you know, how can I up my leadership game and get myself more firmly established on that leadership track. And so this is just the perfect book at the perfect time for me. So well done.
Thank you.
And one of the things that I immediately connected with was this notion, and we, Tom Hood and I talk about this all the time, that we all just don't seem to have any extra time on our hands. So you know, I guess my first question is, how can we expect to make any kind of significant moves toward preparing ourselves to be leaders when we're busier than ever, just trying to churn through the work that's in front of us?
Well, it's an interesting question for us. I mean, this is one that we thought about right at the beginning of all of our research, because that's what we heard a lot of from all the leaders that we talked to was just this idea that not only don't they have the time, but actually they don't have the luxury of allocating the time the way they want, which is kind of a dual issues that many face. So we were thinking about, you know, whatever we do and whatever we say you should do, we have to do it in a way that people can integrate the practice in what they currently do, because they're not going to find extra time. And so we came at it from two angles. The first one is there's still room for more delegation. I think you know, we don't delegate. And one of the questions that we always ask people is why don't you delegate? Is it an issue of trust and you don't trust the capability of your people, in which case that's the issue you should address? Or is it your own drive which lets you, you know, take over because you don't believe anybody can do it as well as you can? So there's some work to be done on delegation. That should free up some time, but it won't free up that much time. So the second thing that we talk about is to try to approach everything you do with a leadership mindset. Whatever it is that you do, the key to any task for us is to think, what did I learn from doing this? And what can I teach out of doing this? So if you start to think about, we're doing a podcast now, you come out of the podcast and the leadership mindset would say, okay, was there any lessons in here that I personally learned? How can I turn these into lessons that I can teach others? You know, and if you do that regularly, and if you do that for all the tasks that you take into that you have to complete, then I think you are starting to put yourself on a leadership mindset, on a way of behaving, and then you can start to integrate some of the practices that we talk about.
So it's more of a mindset type of thing than it is actually carving out any more or additional time. It's just thinking about it differently.
Yeah. I mean, we called it, you know, hacking your day job in order to get your dream one. But that's kind of what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. So I immediately latched on to the first of your three steps toward being a credible executive, which you call boundless perspective, which Tom and I have been thinking about this in using different terms, but let's talk about that notion for a little bit. How do we get beyond the idea of always continually working in the business of trying to make things run better or smoother or more efficiently or whatever the case may be, and start working on the business? First of all, what's the difference between the two? How do you think of those two terms?
We think of in the business as delivering results today. So anything which you have to do, which is important, which is immediate, and it's part of your role, and that you have to do. Now, the problem with most of those tasks is they tend to be low leverage in terms of building capability in the future. So they have to be done, and you don't have a choice. But if that's all you do, then you'll be okay today, but you won't be okay tomorrow. Mm-hmm. On the business are the important tasks, but they're not immediate. So they don't bring you any, you know, reviewing processes, thinking about capability. None of that is going to bring you an immediate result, but it's very high leverage. That's where the future comes from. So there's no negative consequences from not doing them now, but there's really high benefits from doing them long term.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is because there's no benefits for doing no negative consequences for not doing them now. They're the ones we tend to deprioritize. We know they're important, but we've got other stuff going on. And then, by the way, we also talk about out of the business, which is when you start to, you know, forget about your business objective as they stand and start to think about disruption. And in our research, we found a ratio of time where ideally the more senior you get, the more time you spend on the business. And you're still looking probably at a ratio of, I don't know, 30% of time in the business, 50% on the business, 20% out of the business. So you have to kind of reframe your time. So that's kind of how we define the three areas. And again, part of the challenge for most people, especially aspiring leaders, is organizations will always try to push you back in the business because that's where you create value. That's your role. That's what, you know, so anybody, every time you try to move on the business, you're going to be pushed back in the business. So the key is to start with the sphere that you can influence. So to look on the business within your role and within the role surrounding you, rather than to start thinking about overall organizational processes or to start right at the top. So once you start to think about where you spend your time, review the activities that fit in the business, and again, back to the mindset we were talking about earlier, start to think about what is it that I'm learning here? How can it be of benefit to colleagues around and alongside me?
And those things that you work on in the business, and you mentioned delegation and how we have to get better at delegating things. Are those kind of good candidates for things that we might potentially be able to delegate to the right people and free up a little bit more of our time?
I think you would, and if you, you know, and if you understand the map of relationships that we have, which is another thing we talk about doing in the book, where we say, look, you have to understand the relationships you have and maximize those relationships so that you're doing only what is necessary for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't outsource and you can't delegate everything because it is part of your credibility that you can deliver, but it will certainly start to give you an idea as to what it is that you can move on the business with rather than just in the business.
Got it. So back to this notion of boundless perspective. Describe what you mean by that. How do you define that?
Well,
when we were doing the research for this book, we figured, what's the best way to answer the question for people who want to progress their careers towards bigger leadership positions? What's the best way to describe to them what it is that really makes a difference when you've reached the top? So the only way we could do that was by talking to people who'd already made it into the C-suite, and those were the people who we spoke to. And one of the things that we found was that top leaders actually never delegate their participation in many and varied networks. So sometimes the nature of these can be pretty left field. I mean, really surprising and unexpected. And when we pushed a bit more to understand what it was that they were doing in these networks, we discovered that they were searching for and finding the answers that would help them address the inner issues that they had in their businesses, the out issues, going back to what Emmanuel was saying, and the on issues. So they were asking themselves questions, you know, if we're looking, thinking about in, you know, what's the nature of my task? What's the nature of my team? You know, and the on questions were about how do I create value for my enterprise? How do I increase collaboration across this organization? But out, here we were asking the real, you know, the boundary challenging questions. You know, why do we do what we do? Why do we have a right to exist? And that's what they were doing. And that was something that we found was completely unique to people in the C-suite, that level of exploration and discovery without boundary.
So this idea of boundless perspective, it's almost a matter of diversity of thought almost. Is that, am I kind of on the right track there? Surrounding ourselves with people who are going to allow us to see further than we could on our own?
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I just give you one example. One person who we spoke to is the chief executive of an investment bank. And he told us how he had one day in his diary set aside each month to go and spend time with a community group. And, you know, at first sight, we kind of thought, why on earth would an investment banker be remotely interested in a group of people who are thinking about the needs of the community? But actually, this was all about him thinking much more broadly about how do I get exposure to people who I would never otherwise meet, who will give me completely new, fresh insights from very different perspectives into what's on their minds. And how can I use that information to solve problems or to create opportunities for my bank?
I think, you know, there's kind of two ideas, I think, that underpin this concept of boundless perspective. One is, it's a bit like in The Matrix, you know, when Neo takes the pill and then suddenly sees The Matrix. I think at some stage, you see your organization within a context. So rather than being within a role, within that organization, within a function, you see the overall organization end to end, and then you manage to rise above it to observe it and think, okay, where is this thing going? How do I optimize it? What is? And for that to happen, you need to start thinking differently, hence your point quite rightly about diversity of thought, about diversity of perspective, about a new idea, about things that you might have never thought about. And so it's the marriage of those two around, do I see the organization as an overall system, and have I raised above it to see how I can start to impact, influence, and move this system forward?
I was speaking with some folks recently who kind of described what you were referring to, Emmanuel, as they put it this way. You know, when we're working in the business, we're down, you know, cutting roads through forests and doing great work and we're making great progress. But if we don't take the time to like climb up the trees every now and then and make sure that we're cutting in a straight path, then not, you know, all that work is for naught.
Yeah, it's a great analogy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's also every now and again, you need somebody to challenge you on why are you cutting anyway? And you know, and some of the bigger question. And I think that's what was surprising to a certain extent in the research that we did, as Catherine said, is just the amount of people who do stuff which most people would think is just a bit strange, a bit weird, a bit of a waste of time or whatever. But actually I've learned to it's a certain curiosity and a way of trying to always integrate what is it that I see into what it is that I do.
Mm-hmm. So is all this conversation a function of, as you put it in the book, engineering change rather than being victims of it?
Well, you know, I think you can't make change happen without knowing where you want to get to, taking a step off the trees to look at the shape of the road. And secondly, being able to take others with you. And, you know, if you can't do that, then you do just become a victim. I mean, we have all come across many, many organizations where we just see people jumping on the bandwagon, I think that's more frequent. We experience that more frequently than we see the people who are breaking new ground. But I kind of think I would always rather, as an executive, be the one who's breaking new ground and shaping the market.
Right. How do we, you mentioned, Catherine, this idea of our networks and the importance of our networks. And I think for a lot of folks in business today, networking is kind of a four-letter word. How do we know where to look in terms of finding the right people who are going to give us that boundless perspective?
Well, I think the start point is actually we would use the idea, the notion of in the business, on the business, out of the business. Mm-hmm. Acknowledging the fact that people are busy and they only have so much time to focus on networks, then obviously you want to spend that time in the best and most valuable way possible. So our suggestion is, if you categorize your search for networks against those three categories, then actually that starts to give you a bit of a roadmap. So if we say a bit more about that, in the business networks, for example, are those that are linked to your professional networks, your professional expertise. So in the business networks would be ones, if I'm an accountant, then I would want to understand what my local accountant's organization is up to, what they're saying professionally. Mm-hmm. On the business, what we're talking about there is are the trade associations, of different markets. So for example, MACPA would be, I think, a great example of that kind of network, where you're bringing together people from different sectors or from similar sectors, but who are doing similar work.
Right.
And then when you look at out of the business, actually what our advice to people is just pick things that fascinate you. So if you always wanted to be a fireman as a kid, you know, why not find something to do with engineering? Or if you were always really interested in what makes the world the way it is, then you're going to pursue something environmental. But just look at something, because here what you're wanting to do is to really challenge your boundaries and think about things. So why not spend time on stuff that's really interesting to you and think about what the consequences could be for your business?
Yeah. For the longest time, it seemed like, you know, things were moving at a pace where we didn't really have to look beyond the boundaries of our own professions to see things that impacted us. And now it's almost crucial that we look outside of our circle of comfort, or where we do most of our business, to look outside and understand what's going on outside of our profession, because sooner or later that those types of things are going to have huge impacts for what we do inside the profession.
Indeed, they do.
I know, and it, you know, I think perversely, it's even more true for certain professions than for others. So I think if you're in finance, you know, in finance or accounting, I think people will try to keep you within the confine of your expertise a lot more, because there is a sense that expertise enables you to see the entire organization. I mean, you know, I like to say cash is the ultimate cross-functional KPI, you know. So if you don't understand the organization better than anybody, then nobody does. But that also gives you a sense that, therefore, you have the necessary view. And I think unless you challenge that view with stuff, as Catherine says, that is just plain weird and wonderful,
right,
then you run the risk of actually, you know, almost narrowing down your focus far too much. So it's important to look out, it's still also, you know, just interesting and enjoyable. And it's good for people to sometimes do interesting and enjoyable things.
Oh, absolutely. And so how do we start to take the information that we're getting from all those various networks and translate those boundless insights into added value for our clients and customers, the people that we're doing business with?
Oh, you know, just like we've all come across plenty of examples of organizations jumping on the bandwagon. I think we have all experienced colleagues at times along the way who are great on ideas, but a bit short on implementation. So, I mean, what we talk about in this context is that there are two elements to what you need to do here. And that is first that you take what you learn from your networks and organize that information to turn it into insights. Mm-hmm. So in other words, and the way we advise people to do that, based actually on some of the tips that our research population gave us about what they do, is to look at what you learn from your networks and to organize that into three categories. So what you're looking at is, are these solutions that fix immediate problems? Are they things that could address recurring pain points? Or are they actually potentially broader opportunities? And what I'm referring back here actually to the in on out concept. So in the business, immediate problems, on the business, recurring themes and pain points, and out of the business, massive opportunity, or even small opportunities, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have those insights, you know, then the usual rules around how you communicate effectively and share insights to create impact apply. And what we've used here is the 5 C's. So you have to be concise. People are busy. They don't want to listen for long. You have to be really clear. Summarize your stuff into one sentence. It's not reductive. It's just straightforward. Be credible. Be compelling. And also make sure you're consistent. You know, if you're not going to be consistent with the purpose of the organization, then forget it. So there are those rules that we're all actually quite familiar with. But actually, if you focus application of those rules on the way that you share the insights that you get from your search under Boundless Perspective, then that's how you start to create value in organizations.
It's funny how so much of this stuff always kind of circles back to our ability to communicate well and to tell stories well and to have people see what we see, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So I'm interested, circling back to how do we become leaders, right? For those of us who are not yet leaders, but who are on a leadership track or who would like to be on a leadership track. And by the way, who might not be convinced that they're ready? What's the first step? I mean, how do we amp up our leadership game?
Well, I think, to anyone who's not convinced they're ready, I would say that you're probably in a better place than a lot of people who think they are. So you know, that reluctance, I think, conveys probably more self-awareness than in a lot of cases people think they are ready. So, but it also speaks to, I think there's two areas that we talk about. One is just skill, and the other one is about confidence and desire. Now, in terms of skill, there's some really, we start the book by talking about non-negotiables. You know, there's kind of four things that you have to do. And until you've cracked that, there's no point trying to move ahead. The first is you've got to know your stuff. You've got to be good at what you do. And that, you know, you will be the judge of that, or you will get other people to help you judge that. Then there's something about, you know what it is you don't need to know, but you need to have an opinion on. I think, again, people, you know, you move in organization at the beginning by almost learning not to have opinion and just try to do what you're told well. Yet there comes a point at which people start to value your opinion and you've almost forgotten how to have any, because you haven't had to have any for a long time. So I think there's something about, you know, knowing when you have to have an opinion, of having opinion about things that are adjacent to you, having opinion if you're in marketing about HR, if you're in HR about accounting, you know, just that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One which I mean, the rest of the world struggles with, some of the people you speak to regularly may not, but you have to be fluent in finance. You know, whether people like it or not, finance is the language of business. You have to learn it, you have to speak it, you have to know it. And I think in our experience, certainly, it is something that a lot of people struggle with for a long time. So we always say to people that we consult with that two things that matter about finance is anytime somebody asks you a question about accountancy, the answer is always, it depends. and the second thing is make sure you have a good friend who is an accountant. Because actually that's you can't afford not to have those two things.
That's right.
And then the last one, you know, do people want to work with you? Not because they have to, but because they want to. You know, do you have networks? Do people gravitate towards you? Now, if you've cracked those four things, and they're hard to crack, but you're probably more ready to take the next step than you believe you are. And then the next step is simply about starting to think for yourself, why? What's your desire? You know, why do you want to lead? A lot of people end up on leadership tracks not because they made a choice to want to be a leader, or because they think they have something to contribute, or because they think they can, you know, shape the change that they'd like to see, but actually end up being on the track because that's just the natural progression in their career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a real struggle. I mean, one of the things, if nothing else, that we've learned through the research that we did for this book is leadership is really hard. It's hard because it requires stamina. It's tiring. It's nonstop. It's demanding. It's emotionally draining. It's, you know, so why do you want to do this? You know, and the only possible answer is that because you have something worth sharing and worth shaping with the world. And that, you know, and that's why I go back to where I started. The people who are reluctant to lead are normally the people who are asking the right questions.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And I mean, going back to those types of, you know, reluctant future leaders who may have not even considered themselves as, you know, potential leaders going down the road, but suddenly find themselves in a position where, okay, here's an opportunity. How do you convince yourself that you're ready to take other people and other organizations to the next level?
Well, one of the realizations is many people carry the wrong picture of leadership in their head, and as a result, believe that it's an untenable picture for them. So everybody thinks that somehow, you know, when you go as a tourist to visit a tall building, some kind of skyscraper, and you get to the viewing platform at the top, and there's always those kind of long views. You put a quarter in, and you look through those binoculars and see the road ahead. And kind of people equate leadership with somehow having that ability to see the future miles ahead and to be able to have a clear vision. That's not the reality of leadership. I mean, leadership is more akin to driving at 200 miles an hour on the motorway in heavy rain with a broken windscreen and windscreen wipers that don't work. And somehow trying to stay on the road. And when you understand that, leadership is not being superhuman, it's just actually connecting to your humanity and having made a decision that there is something you can offer the world, mm-hmm. then I think it becomes much more approachable for most people. I think until we carry this idea in our head that leadership is somehow something that nobody but very, very special people can do, I think we are, you know, running the risk of leaving so many great potential leaders behind because we're alienating them. It's about, you know, do you have something to contribute? Do you have something to share? And then can we help you by giving you the skills to do that?
I was going to follow that up with a question that asked you to define leadership, but I think you may have at least nailed it partially there. I guess my final question would be, you know, we talk about how quickly and radically the world seems to be changing these days. Do you think leadership itself is evolving in a world that's evolving as quickly as this one is?
I think it's interesting because in a way it isn't, I think what the world is doing is it's bringing it back to its essence. I think that the change is forcing us to lead in the way that leadership was intended to be. So for us, when we defined it purely as your ability to secure the positive engagement of others with a goal. So you know, can you get other people to willingly and positively and energized go forward with you? Now, the point now, and I think that what the world is doing is the world is saying, look, the point is not that you have to define the goal. The point is that you have to make people stronger and more capable so that together you can define the road ahead. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big change. The big change is you could get away for a long time with saying, this is the goal and I'm going to try to sell it to you and to get you to follow. I think now what we're saying is we're seeing leadership as it should be, which is to say, look, I will help you to define with me where it is that we need to be. Because you don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers, but I have a way, which is why we put so much time on Boundless Perspective on the business, is I have a way to shape this that will get us all forward.
Nice. Well, Emmanuel, Catherine, thank you for the book, for your insights, for your time. It's been great catching up with you again. It's been far too long. Let's do this again real soon. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
We hope we can reconnect soon as well in person. It'd be nice to be together again.
That was my conversation with authors and leadership experts Emmanuel Gobio and Catherine Thomas. You can find out more by visiting either collaborationpartners.co.uk or emmanuelgobio.com. That's Emmanuel with two M's and Gobio as in G-O-B-I-L-L-O-T. And you can pick up a copy of their new book, Unleash Your Leader, How to Win in Business. It's on Amazon right now. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering those future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. That's it, gang. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again next week.